Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 148. Today, we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 2, Episode 7, Lie to Me, and 8, The Dark Age. As usual, if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can reach us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable, this post on hypable.com or any of our other Buffy-centric posts, or on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.com. .tumblr.com. I'm Karen. I'll be your lead host today, and I'm also joined by Mitch, Brittany, and Natalie. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're going to start off with fun facts, and I will kick this off. Like I said, I'm Karen, and the other day, I felt a great connection to Mitchell because I've started watching Co-Optitude, which is a web series with Felicia Day and her brother Ryan, where they go back and play old console games. And they played Pokemon Snap. And I haven't thought about this game in a really, 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 really long time. But I used to be so good at this game, and I was super obsessed with it, and I'd play it for like hours at a time. And Mitch is who I think of when I think of Pokemon now. So aww, I had to shout it out to him, and I miss this game, Mitch. Like, seriously, I'm like, really? Are
you
where?
So if you download it on the virtual console on the Wii, you can play the original N64 version on your Wii, and you can play it with the GameCube controller, and it's so much fun. Like,
oh,
it's a lot
God.
Shorter than you'll remember. And can I break your heart, Karen? Like, break your heart in half?
Sure, okay. Just do it.
It seems like you're an N64 fan. Some guy in front of me today at Goodwill decided to pick up a bunch of games that he didn't even care about to, like, go sell somewhere else. They were such rares as, like, Perfect Dark and, like, Star Wars, like, Rogue Nation, like, all these crazy, and this guy was just about to go sell them, and I was so heartbroken. I thought of you, Karen, because I was looking for Pokemon Snap, because if I found it, I would have sent it to you. I really would have, because I have an N64. I probably would have been like, here, happy early Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa or something. Because, I mean, I'm kind of actively looking, so secret's out.
that's really sweet. Seriously, I don't have an N64, but, like, I would, like, put it in a shadow box and hang it on my wall just because you sent it to me. It would be. I would be into it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's enough about me. Mitch, why don't you share your fun fact with us?
Okay, so my fun fact is, Natalie, you'll appreciate this. I'm moving out of my, quote, glitter bomb apartment. And
oh my God.
Is it still covered in glitter?
I'll never, yes, but from another instance, don't ask. No, I'm moving into a new apartment, and I spent all last week painting, and I kid you not, when I say 15 minutes before this podcast, I put the final dab of paint on the wall. And I'm so 100,000,000% done with paint. I never again want to do it. Like, this is such a relief to finally just be sitting and podcasting and not thinking about, like, straight lines and tape and, oh my God, just don't paint. Just hire someone to do it. You're going to go crazy.
So you're repainting your old apartment to have it back to condition when you move out. Is that right?
See,
you're painting a new one.
No, I should be doing that, but I'm doing my new apartment.
Why are you doing it? Surely the landlord should do that before you move in. Like, that's not your responsibility.
Well, I'll show you the design.
Maybe in America, people don't have rights. I don't know.
We still have rights, Natalie. Don't worry. Donald Trump hasn't squashed that yet. But no, we're here to the point where I made a really fun design with a new color. Like, they had a white, so I put down, like, this slate gray. And I have a copper stripe going through it on this giant chimney. I'll take a picture and tweet it out to our watchers so you guys can see my beautiful hard work and appreciate why I'm just so happy to be under Watchable today, not painting.
I can understand that. Mm-hmm. Natalie, what's your fun fact?
I have a pair of Karen socks on my desk.
Oh, the Karen socks.
Yeah. Actually, Leo wore them the other day, and she said to me, and as soon as she got there, I was like, you're wearing Karen's socks. And she was like, I was literally going to text you. She was going to text you, Karen, saying, I'm wearing your socks, but thought it might be weird.
No, that's not weird. I never want those socks back, ever. I just want you to keep them.
I accidentally stole a pair of Karen's socks 2 years ago when we were at the Teen Wolf Con in LA. And they're in my house now, and apparently they accidentally went into Leo's drawers of socks, and she was wearing them the other day. And, right now they're on the desk next to me, clean and balled up for some reason. I don't know why they're on the desk, but they are.
To remind you of me.
Don't, you know, just so you guys, listeners, know, you know, we really are, you know, it's not just for the cameras, guys. We really are all friends and we all know each other in real life. And, you know, it is a real family over here.
We even share clothes.
Natalie, yeah. I want to make a movie based around your life called The Sisterhood of the Traveling Socks.
Oh, God.
They'd probably fit a multitude of people better than a pair of jeans would. So
right? That's just so unrealistic.
That's true. That's unrealistic. I have all those books, but it is very questionable, I will say.
Like, America Ferrera is right. Like, she's not the same size as Alexis Bledel or Blake Lively. It doesn't happen.
I mean, it's supposed to be like magic. So.
I know.
Whatever. Okay, Brittany, your fun fact.
Well, I've been saving this fun fact, even though it's not really relevant to anything we're talking about, because I was waiting to be on the podcast with Natalie.
We can just know it together if you want to do it.
No, I told you I'm saving it for rewatchable. So Natalie finds this amusingly interesting, but since I grew up in New Jersey, I don't. But I am from the same hometown as Kevin Smith from Jay and Silent Bob, among other things. And he went to the same high school that my brother went to, and he filmed everything around my house, including Dogma. All this was sparked by Alan Rickman's unfortunate passing, because we were talking about the movie Dogma and how my church of my high school was the church that they used to film the exterior for. So that's my fun fact. Kevin Smith and I are cut from the same cloth.
Because they did the interiors in, like, somewhere else, I think.
Yeah, the
like,
interiors are somewhere else, but the street scenes are my high school.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just an unbelievably massive fan of the Jay and Silent Bob series, like the Viewersk Universe, as they're called. And, yeah, he filmed a lot of them around, yeah, as Brittany said, Red Hook, New Jersey, just in case
Red
anyone
Bank,
wants to stalk
Red
Brittany.
Bank.
Red Bank. Red Hook. No, Red Bank, New Jersey. Red Hook is the Brooklyn precinct where Steve Rogers grew up. Sorry. that was a Freudian slip, not a outright mistake. I've been there too. I actually spent 4th of July there last year because I'm cool.
So American.
But yeah, Red Bank, I'm going to make Brittany take me there and
it's gonna
look
happen.
At things weirdly. And yeah, this was my, like, you know how Karen likes Tremors and stuff. The Jay and Silent Bob movies were my massive, massive favorite comedy movies when I was in high school, and still now they're unbelievably clever, and I probably learned like the basis of everything I know about like nerd culture from them, which then grew into a genuine and wide-reaching obsession. So when Brittany said this, I was just like, how can you have never said this before? I don't understand, like, how this is not something that you tell everyone, like, so yeah, I was very excited.
Cool. Okay, let's jump right into episode 7, Lie to Me. And Mitch, I assume the synopsis is your creation?
Correct. And you'll know that from the first line.
Okay, yes. Let's go. All right. In this episode, Buffy is lied to by Ford, re anyone that buys that car brand. The episode opens with Angel chatting intimately with Drusilla as Buffy spies via rooftop. When Buffy's old classmate Ford waltzes into town, he and Buffy totes McGoats have a secret handshake, predictably infuriating the equally infuriating and persistent Xander. At the Bronze, Ford nonchalantly reveals that he knows Buffy is the Slayer. Angel smells something off about Ford, so he enlists Willow to investigate Ford via this thing called the Internet. Angel then brings Willow and Xander to a creepy club of vampire wannabes that drink too much of Ford's pro-vamp Kool-Aid. Buffy confronts Angel about Drusilla as he reveals he was once obsessed with torturing her to the point where he murdered her whole family and then vamped Drew. Using the information from Angel on Ford's true intentions, Buffy is trapped in the pro-vamp basement before she can convince the Kool-Aiders that this whole undead thing was a bad idea. Spike, Drew, and some other vamps start feasting on the Kool-Aiders. I hate that name. But Buffy stops the frenzy when she threatens to end Drew's afterlife. Ford had brain cancer, and although Buffy cares for about a second, she decides it'd be better to let Spike vamp Ford simply so she can stake the sleazy bastard when he rises from the grave. So let's start off with something that's pretty interesting, which is Angel and Drusilla's history / relationship. I think you can call it relationship. Newbies, why do you think that he was so obsessed with her? Do you have any theories or just any thoughts on their history, their backstory?
Well, she seemed to know his mother really well because she was like, what is mom going to sing to you now? And the way she was like saying it, I was like, well, maybe their families were connected or something and she got more attention in their little vampire community. So he decided to torture her. But I feel like she would like that because she's just so weird and I cannot get a read on her. So I want to know what she was like when she was just healthy and like a vibrant human being, because I can't understand why anyone would be obsessed with this person because she's so awful right now. I don't get it. So I feel like she at one time was just like the best and Angel was like, I can't deal with this because I'm pretty too and I need some attention. So he just like decided to kill everyone around her. And she probably, if she was in this sort of like state that she's in right now, or at least some sort of like offshoot of the state she's in right now, she might have enjoyed it, and then his plan to kill everyone backfired.
Mitch?
I mean, Brittany just put it so eloquently, honestly. I don't know how else I can add on to the fact that I didn't have too much of an idea of what's going on. That's why I posed it here. And then, Brittany, you've honestly posed a very good solution to my quizzical thoughts about Angel and Drew. It just makes sense that she was just so pretty and he was so pretty and he was like, let's be pretty forever together, but you have to be just as tortured as me. And since you're not going to kill your family, I'll kill them for you.
Pretty.
She's like, cool, I'm going to go crazy though. Is that all right? He's like, sure, that's what it takes. And now they're here.
I mean, based on just this episode, my interpretation of, because I'd sort of forgotten about when things about this got revealed, but based on what he told Buffy to me, it sounded like, I think what you're meant to be taking from Angel at the moment is that him as a vampire, like not having a soul, him as a vampire was a lot crueler and crazier and meaner than a lot of your average vampires. Like if you compare him to Spike, who, by the way, I haven't been on yet since Spike's come on, and it's very... Yeah, Karen, I have not been on yet since Spike has started on the show, so let's talk about that for a second. But yeah, I think, you kind of see with Spike this example of a, you know, he's a leader, you know, he's got minions that work for him and stuff, but he's a person, like he has a personality and stuff like that. But what you're kind of learning about Angel is that his vampire form was like crazy, like he was really bad. And it sounded like what he told Buffy, that he met this girl, she was a good, pure, beautiful, wonderful person. And because she was so pure, good, and wonderful, he was getting the biggest thrill out of his life out of ruining her, basically. Like, he made her a vampire on the day she took her holy orders as a nun. Like, that's very calculated cruelty. And I think that that's sort of more what it's about rather than, like, who Drusilla was. Like, she was just a good girl that he got obsessed with making terrible.
Yes, that's basically what I wanted to say about that, too.
Yeah. So it's more about who Angel was before than who she was, I think.
But so is she, you don't have to answer this, but was she just like, she was just a nun and then she was this pathetic, like, weak person the whole time after that? Because, like, Spike is always talking about making her better, so she had to have some sort of personality or some redeeming quality that before she got to the state that she's in right now. Is what I'm thinking. Like I said, you don't have to answer it, but that's just what
That's hard to answer. She's special. She's different. You will have noticed already that she is a little bit psychic, like that she has these kind of...
Yeah. Because Spike's always like, what did you say? Like, no, yeah, I need
that's
more detail.
Like, so that's quite an unusual factor. But also the fact that we learn that, you know, people think she was almost killed in an angry mob, that's... You know, that people thought she was killed. I think that, you know, Spike making her better is more about helping her from whatever happened there rather than helping her from her, you know,
Angel.
Very start. Yeah, I think she might have been, you know, he made her insane, Angel, and I think she's been insane ever since. Like, as far as I can remember, that's the situation.
Yeah, but I'm just hoping that Spike, like, just because it would make me feel more comfortable as a viewer, that Spike, like, had some sort of relationship before she was this deteriorated, because then my mind instantly goes to, like, Spike is clearly taking advantage of this person, and it's not cool. But I don't think that that's the case.
I would agree with you on that, yeah.
So I think we're meant to assume, then, without having super fans answer this, Britt, that this is an idea that you can all hate on me for this. Stephanie Meyer borrowed for Twilight that some people as humans might have some kind of, you know, inclination toward a supernatural ability. It won't be that strong, but if you turn into a vampire or anything supernatural, maybe kind of like Teen Wolf where, you know, the werewolf bite can change you to different things and whatnot, that will come out once you're supernatural. That'll kind of tap into that power and that'll allow you to become special. And Drew must have had this ability to see through people or understand them or sense them as a human, and that might have interested an Angel. Because I feel like, unlike the Twilight vamps, where there are a dime a dozen, you know, special ones. They try and be special, but they're really not at that point. Where it's more of like here, like Drew is a really big deal, and I think that's why Spike finds her so important. And it's nice to see that Buffy catches on to that really quickly, where she does in this episode, and she even knows that when Angel's talking to Drew in the beginning, she can see that something is just different about this girl. It's not that just she's like off, but she has something.
Plus the fact that she like ended up in, it doesn't, like, if this was the person who was just randomly killed off in that like Prague uprising or whatever, like why would her picture be in that book that like Giles has? Like why was she important enough to include, even if Giles doesn't know? Like there has to be something that like made her important, even if Giles doesn't know it right now.
Yeah,
clearly, I mean, there's something going on.
The book that they went and looked up was like the Book of Angels, like the book where he had the history about angels. So, yeah.
Yeah, suffice it to say, like, you will continue to get more information and more backstory. So, you're asking good questions right now, basically.
I need to know what the newbies think of Spike, though, because Brittany sounds like she doesn't want him to be a dick. So are you a fan, Brittany?
I'm indifferent to Spike right now. I was pleasantly surprised that he had an accent. I think it makes him more likable.
The British accent.
Yeah. Like I said, when I was on for his introduction, I was like, oh, he has an accent. I've seen pictures of him, but I've never heard him speak.
Oh, that's so weird. Yeah.
But I'll... I'm indifferent. I don't hate him, but I don't necessarily like him just yet because I don't think I know what his deal is besides just, you know, having some evil plan to kill the Slayer. I'm more interested in what his backstory is. So right now I'm indifferent. I don't love him. I don't hate him.
It may seem really petty, but I'm more of curious about his hair. I can't tell if he's a natural blonde. It's really bothering me. I think it's bleached.
His eyebrows
definitely
are
not a natural blonde, bitch. I'll just get black.
Spoiler alert, not natural.
Yeah, and they don't try to play it off as that. Like, well, I think, you know that episode, you know that one in previous week where maybe you guys discussed it, where Willow's like, Angel, how do you shave? I don't think that they can change their hair, if you know what I mean. I don't think Angel shaves because I don't think their hair grows, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Spike bleached his hair and now he's stuck with it, basically, unless he dyes it again. That's my theory anyway.
And that's dangerous because, like, bleaching it makes it very brittle and it has to grow out in order for it to be healthy again. There's no way to have, extremely healthy bleached hair. So it's going to fall out is my point. And
he's immortal, basically, until someone stabs him.
Because even Drew goes, like, I'm afraid all my hair is going to fall out. And I was like, cool. Another note that Stephanie Meyer had where your body stops. You don't grow past your vamp date.
I think that's right for this. I can't remember, honestly, but I think that's right. Anyway, I think this is one of those tangents that Karen wanted to
probably.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to get up on my soapbox for just a second because I know Natalie agrees with me, am not going to be using ship names for these characters. I'm not going to call them Bangel or Bangle or whatever you
I
want.
I knew that was you.
It's...
Cuffy. Mitch wrong. Is Cuffy.
Cuffy is great. Oh, come on.
No. No, look.
Give me just one. Just give me Cuffy.
Do whatever you want to do. Newbies, do whatever you want to do. But I'm not going to be using them because that's not how it was. And it's not how a lot of people refer to them now. It feels so wrong to me.
There's one in particular that I'm not going to say because it's a spoiler that does get used as a portmanteau a lot that I see people using. And I think that's because it happened towards the very end of the show when that kind of stuff started happening. But at this point in the show, no one talked like that. So let's carry on.
So
we're carrying over the original period of the show. We're not going to try and force upon Tumblr where Tumblr did not yet touch.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm not going to bring any of the newbies down, but look.
Bagel just rolls off the tongue because it sounds.
Also, it just doesn't feel right. I don't know why. Mainly because I'm just not, like, you know, exposed to this show enough, but I also just, it doesn't seem right. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I'm a little bit of a newer fan, too. Not as old as, like, some of the people that watched it live. And that, like, I came to it after, and it still feels really wrong to me. So, okay, that's out of the way. I also note that
I spelled it angle, not angel, so.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Okay, so we're done with that. But I do really want to ask, for the newbies in particular, like, whether or not you really like Buffy and Angel together yet, whatever, are you concerned about what this could mean if Angel is lying to Buffy about his connection to Drusilla? Do you have any theories as to, like, why or what this could mean, etc.?
I don't know if I'm concerned about him lying so much as never having more than 5 minutes to give Buffy 400 years of history about himself. So, or like 300, whatever it is. I wouldn't be so much concerned about him intentionally lying as omitting information. Because Buffy's doing, like, a lot of prying, which is fine. Like, when she, like, you know, looked in the Book of Angel and found that he liked, like, you know, girls who dress up in fancy dresses. And so she went and was that for Halloween. But, I, like, that's fine if she wants to, like, poke around there. But I don't think Angel owes her anything at this point. And I feel like their relationship is way too rushed for the total of 2 hours that they've spent together since they met.
In 5 minute increments.
Yeah. So it's like, it's very weird for me for them to be, like, you know, expecting so much of each other. Maybe Angel can expect a little bit more of Buffy, but I feel like Buffy, like, has no, her asking Angel to be like, you know, give me your entire history. I need to know everything that you're doing. And it's very complicated. And she has a certain role to keep. And he has a lot of history that he needs to, you know, either push aside so that she doesn't come after him, because she is a slayer and wants to kill vampires. And he's a vampire who has done some things that a slayer should take some vengeance out on. But yeah, I don't really buy them as a couple yet in my mind. I like the cat and mouse game they kind of have going on, and I hope that continues more, even though it feels like it's not going to, because they're kind of, like, in it to win it at this point.
I mean, Britt, I'm okay with him having that past and keeping it secret, because you were saying, you know, Buffy needs to take vengeance for the things he's done. I mean, unless it's, like, specifically he shot JFK, I'm, like, I'm cool with this. Like, I think he's working on his way to be a broody little soulful vamp, and that's cool. He can't help the nature of the beast that he is until he can. When he's given that soul, all else before that is off the table. It doesn't matter to me that he tortured Drew's family, killed them, and then made her into a vampire. It's irrelevant for the fact that he was not the same person at all. He wasn't even a person, I guess we could even say. He was more of a monster. So I'm cool with the way that this is all going down now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the disbursement of information is fine with me. It's the fact that I can't buy into the fact that they're, like, this serious of a couple worth exchanging, like, do you love me's at this point in the series. I think that's my bigger problem, not so much, like, what Angel's telling her and what Angel's not telling her, though I know that Angel has a lot to be revealed, because how could you not? We've only seen him for not too long, and he has a lot of history to give us.
I have very little problems with the speed at which their relationship is moving, but I think that comes in hindsight. Would you agree?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it a lot more than I ever remember. Like, I kind of am just, mainly because I'm just relishing in how awkward Angel is, as I've said so many times. Like, to me, it feels less, I don't know, less weird this time, less age gappy as well, because I probably, as when I was 14, I was like, oh my God, he's so old. But now I kind of look at him and I see them both as, like, babies the same age anyway. Like, so I don't know, I'm enjoying it more. I don't know what, you know, much more to say about that. I think that, you know, it would be good to figure out, you know, if it is really only that they've known each other for 2 hours in 5 minute increments, or if there's sort of been more off screen. And I will say, there were a lot of Buffy novels at the time. Like, there were a lot of you know, I guess like extended universe novels where there was different missions or different monsters of the week, like different stories that happened in that timeline that didn't necessarily make it on screen. I don't know if they're ever meant to be canon or not, but they're out there if you want them. And
would you recommend them? Because I've never read any of them.
I only had one. It was about Spike. I do recommend the Tales of the Slayer books. They're amazing, which isn't really much of a spoiler at this point. All it is literally, there's one or two that might be addressed in the show at some point, but they're basically short stories by a collection of different authors about the individual stories, like either the life, like the calling or the death, you know, of different slayers throughout the ages, like different countries, different times, like right from early, you know, like medieval and earlier. Really? And like, yeah. And there's, I think, about four of them called like Tales of the Slayer, Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3, Volume 4. There's maybe two of them in there, maybe three or four that would be spoilery for the show. Right. The rest is all just sort of kind of canonical short stories about, yeah, different slayers throughout history. So that those I do recommend.
When should
the
we...
novels, there are hundreds. And there's also comics which are canon, which are set after the series, which I do
no
recommend.
No more comics.
So don't.
No more comics. I'm done. I'm not talking about comics on this podcast anymore.
Read the comics. Yes,
you need to read the comics because the beach comes back up in the promise. That's all I'm going to say.
It's going to be one of those all over again. It's going to be Atla all over again because there are really canonical comics that finish that follow the story of Buffy after the show finishes. So I will say that at this point. You've got that to look forward to.
When is it okay?
No, there might have been more stories about Buffy and Angel that they had like off screen time, but I don't know.
When is it okay to read the Tales of a Slayer? Because I don't want to spoil myself on a Slayer that I'm not supposed to know about.
I'll flick through them and see if there's any spoilery ones. Honestly, I don't think that any of them are really that.
Because I've always wanted that for Atla. For Avatar, and now that we could do that for...
Oh, the different avatars, like Tales of the Avatar. Yeah, so
This would be really great, because I really want to know, too, maybe we'll learn in canon, I don't want to know yet, what interactions, if any, Angel's had with the Slayers. I want to learn more about, you know, what Spike's doing with all of them, killing them, stalking them, torturing them in turn. It's all going to be really interesting stuff. I'm excited that you're telling us about this too, as newbies. Isn't this just? I mean, Britt, you don't seem too excited about that. I want to sink my teeth right into it. There you go.
Okay.
This is important. Sorry, Karen. I'm so sorry. I've just opened it up. One of the people, literally the first one that was like ancient Greece. By the way, I'll give you that one, Karen. There is a Slayer from ancient Greece. And she takes part in a very important incident in ancient Greece. And the author of that is Greg Rucker, who is writing a lot of the canonical Star Wars extra material now. All the stuff around The Force Awakens, the comic about Poe Dameron, book about Finn, Rey and Poe that's like really – and that story in particular I remember being amazing. So it's kind of people who are used to writing extra canonical material like Scott Alley, he's a comics writer. Like these books are really good. I definitely recommend the Tales of the Slayer, and the authors do know what they're doing. So
okay,
I just had no idea.
Is there a book about Giles? Because that's really all I want to talk about.
I mean, yes, I'm pretty sure there are books about Giles. Like,
I'm obsessed with Giles, guys. It happened. It's all downhill from here.
Good. I'm pretty sure there'd be books about Giles. I just don't know if they're canon or, you know, that good or like there were so many extra canonical books, like so many. I can't even describe it. So you used to go to like the, you know, bookstore in the 90s and, you know, it would be there like in the young adult section and there'd be like shelves and shelves of Buffy books. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
That's how I was with Charmed. Like, there was so many tie-in Charmed books, so I understand. Apologizing to Brittany, because I'm actually going to skip over Giles for this episode, but just because there's so much talk to him next episode, and I really want to focus on him there. So, just for now, we'll get to him shortly, I promise. The other quick thing that I wanted to ask before we actually got into, like, what this episode was actually about. So one more character thing is, Brittany, I guess I'll ask you first. How do you feel at the moment about Xander continuing to chase after Buffy all this time? Are you like super over it? Is it at all interesting?
It's not so much interesting anymore because I totally want Cordelia and Xander to just get together already. I was messaging Karen after I watched the Halloween episode and I was like, I just want to fast forward like 3 seasons when this whole game is over and Xander and Cordelia are together forever. But yeah, I'm kind of, the jokes are played out, I think, with Xander and Buffy. But I've also, I think, just become immune to it. Like, they just happen and I don't hear them anymore. I might just be tuning him out a little bit when that happens. I still think that all of his lines about Angel are hilarious, though, because he's even, like, reacting when Angel's talking to Willow. So I still think those are pretty funny.
I don't know why Xander still exists in the show, because I'm still plot-wise to the point where I think he does nothing to advance the plot. He doesn't have a new love interest. He doesn't have a special skill. Anyone can be a brawler. I mean, it seems like Oz is a nice up-and-coming, broad-shouldered man that could bundle up a couple of vampires, tie them together, and stick them for Buffy
Seth
the
Green?
Side.
Yeah. Oh, God. You think that he is more capable than Xander?
Well, then again, okay, Brittany.
Brittany, do not step to me about Oz. He is
no. But just
a man of eternity.
Just at this moment in time, that little scrawny redhead who wears like camo is more capable.
You know who else was Brittany? You know who else was a little scrawny redhead who got shit done?
Ron Weasley.
Alexander Hamilton. So shut your mouth.
You know who else had no redeeming skills and got crap done? Sokka.
Okay, Mitch, I actually will, like, legitimately argue with you on this point because I think the point of Xander is that he's not a brawler. Like, the girls, you know, Buffy is the strong one, she's the brawn, and Willow's the brains. I will agree that at this moment, like, it is hard to find a place for Xander, but I kind of like the twist on that trope that it's not the guy, you know, getting everything done. He's the one that's kind of, like, in the way, and he's, you know, worried all the time, and they have to save him.
I think what's funny right now about it is that it really feels like they're purposefully holding Xander back. Like, he could have so much more potential. As I think we've all mentioned by now, yes, Xander and his actor are getting, in turn, I guess, much more beefy as we're going along, per that one tweet that I sent out. And I'm okay with this. I want them to do something with it. Make him more of a stud. That's cool. That's fine. Make him more... I mean, maybe Cordelia can become more interested in him than Angel. I mean, maybe that's where we're going. Maybe she's going to figure out that Angel's a vampire and then, you know, focuses on Xander for a good reason. But it feels like they force him in with, like, these stupid love plots, like the Praying Mantis teacher or Twinkie zombie mommy. It's just... I want something of substance for him. I mean, we know that Willow has the internet to use, and that's a cool thing, but really, what can you say in terms of, like, actual specific to Xander help? What does he provide to the Scoobies?
I mean, to me, number one, the thing about him and Buffy, I'm yelling at my TV about it. No, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? You flip on a dime, like, every time something is about her, and it's like, you know, like, every dude that comes near her, yet you're interested in other women, you're hypocritical, you are, like, this is really terrible behavior and whatever, and I've been yelling at my TV about him. But, I mean, I think that one of the points of Buffy is that, you know, not everyone has to be something. It's the fact that they even know Buffy is the Slayer and involved in this universe is completely incidental. And I think that they kind of do that pretty well. Like, they're like Cordelia. Cordelia knows about Buffy, but what does she do? What does she contribute? Like I love her, but she's not got special powers or, you know, a particular thing that she adds to the team. She helps out when she's asked to because she knows that, you know, Buffy helps people and that she's in on the secret. But, yeah, It's incidental. The people that end up finding out about Buffy, and it's just they kind of make the best of what they've got, and I think that that's relatively realistic. And it's more sort of how they deal with that rather than, oh, I know about Buffy, so I better, you know, become a ninja or something.
Well, I would even argue that it's not incidental for Xander to know from the fact that she is taking up this jockey kind of role of, I can beat up anyone to protect you, Xander. And that disturbs him, and I think that that superpower is what makes him, like, not just, you know, enamored with her, but also jealous in a way. And I think that he wants to prove to himself that he can win her over, showing there that he's better than her, I guess, in a way, because he won over her wit. He was able to convince her that he's, in some sort, the alpha male in her life. And it's just so stupid and dragged on. I'm so sick of it. I'm glad you are, Natalie, too. Because
I've been yelling at my television about his, about every time that he says something that is obviously he's only saying it, you know, oh no, we shouldn't do that. That might actually not be helpful to the cause of what they're doing it, but he's saying it because Buffy's talking to another boy, if you know what I mean. Like, the stuff, you know, or the stuff that he says about Angel, which is not justified, and he kind of acts like he has moral high ground, but he's only saying it because he's jealous. Like, that kind of stuff, I need him to stop. But
it gets really frustrating and tiresome, especially this far into season two, that, yeah, I can completely agree with that. And, of course, one of the catalysts for that kind of behavior this episode was the introduction of Ford, who is Buffy's old friend from another school. Natalie, I know we've talked about rewatching the show before and kind of forgetting some of the plot points. Did you remember from the beginning that he wasn't a good dude?
Yeah, I knew the basic plot of this episode kind of when I looked at what we were doing. There was another one we did recently that I'm like, I don't remember any of this, but yeah, I remembered basically the main plot, the brain cancer, and that he was trading with Spike to get turned into a vampire. Yeah, I did. The second one the next one, the Dark Age, that was the one where I remembered Giles's past and that he had this, he was used to be in a cult gang demon thing, but I'd forgotten every incident around it. I'd forgotten every beat of the episode except for the basic facts. This one I did remember though.
This one kind of like unfolded in front of me a little bit before it actually happened on screen. So I quickly remember something like right before it started happening, which was sort of an interesting way to watch the episode. But when he was first introduced, I was like, oh, you know, he's adorable. He's kind of cute. Like, oh, cool. They, you know, they're friends. Who is this guy? I kind of don't remember. And then once they started, like, walking down the street and things started unfolding, I was like, oh, crap, yeah, I remember now. But I'm really interested, like, Brittany, did you see from the beginning that he wasn't a good guy?
Listen, I watch a lot of procedurals, so, yeah, I knew that he was the bad guy. Just fair. Because it's like, oh, I got transferred here randomly and I know who you are from this other school, but I'm totally not going to bring up the fact that you almost burnt down the gym the last time I saw you and like all this other stuff or whatever she did at her other school. He was a little too nonchalant and cool and like comfortable for Buffy to have in her life. So I knew he had to be a little bit of trouble. What I was not prepared for was his like Twilight-esque underground parties that he was hosting.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what I imagine hardcore Twilight fans did. They wanted to become vampires and they like had these basement parties. But I mean,
this in real life.
I know, just Twilight fans.
There are real life, because there's been episodes of like Castle and SVU and stuff that deal with these kind of things.
Yeah.
But people do this in real life. Like, obviously there aren't real vampires, but yeah, there are people who are like convinced that either they are vampires or that they want to be a vampire. They drink each other's blood. They like get and like they live this vampire lifestyle.
And, like, it was really, yeah. I did love though what's his name, Diego and his outfit was incredible. I thought that was brilliant. It was so cool. I laughed very hard at that. I was like, no, this guy is for real. Like, this isn't just like a show. He's actually wearing this.
It was fun. I like the girl too. I can't remember her name. She had a really cool name. Anyone know off the top of their heads what hers was?
Oh god.
Girl Kool-Aider is her name, kind of like Slave Boy 1 and 2. Well, you guys didn't seem to like that I called them that.
Mitch, did you see from the beginning that Ford wasn't a good guy?
I mean, like Brittany, I watched so many procedurals, like iZombie mm-hmm. and whatnot, that I should have. And it's just stupid that I didn't catch it this time. I don't know why. It didn't click. It should have. So long ago. Like, it should have, like, last year, I should have understood that he was, like, what he was. It was just bad.
Last year, okay.
Yeah, so I wasn't too happy that I didn't realize it. I was ashamed, unfortunately, that he was bad. Because I bought it. Because, like, yeah, they're, like, little get-together with how, like, just the way he breaks down Buffy to where she's, like, a giggling little schoolgirl. She's like, OMG, hello, my BFFL. And it's amazing to see Buffy just so carefree because she doesn't get to do that.
I loved that. Loved her.
I also thought she was going to be gay, just the way she was treating him.
Yes.
I was like,
when he arrived.
Brittany, I'm not convinced he's not still.
I mean, they never said either way, like, who cares, he could be. We don't know.
Right.
But, like, when he arrived, she was so natural. She was way more natural than she's ever been with, mm-hmm. like, Willow or Xander. And that she was automatically like, oh my God, like, this is someone who's clearly a real friend to her that, like, she was very comfortable with, and that that was one of my favorite things about the episode was her reactions to him arriving. It didn't feel forced. They actually felt really natural together, and it was automatically that very, like, you know, him calling her Summers and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that very, the world building of them knowing each other before worked really well for me.
I was able to see past the whole I just transferred here thing, because I was because, like, I like to say that I'm not spoiled so much as to the point where I wouldn't know any given member showing up for a 5-episode stint or something. I feel like I could still have that happen to me. Yes, I knew that Spike was coming because you cannot not understand that blonde mane is coming towards you. You see it 2 years ago. But regardless, with this guy, I was almost convinced he could have been in the gang because he was like, because they've introduced characters before like this that are like, oh, I know you're the Slayer, cool, let's keep going. And then they've been kind of part of the Scoobies-ish. I can't think of any examples right off the top of my head, but it kind of feels like, kind of on the calendar. Like, she came in and she was like, so, there's magic. I'm, like, a super magician over here with my computer, so, and let's move on. He felt like a calendar to me, and it was so sad that, like, his story hit me. It was pretty tragic.
Been a good guy, I would have quite liked him to stick with them because I really liked Sarah's chemistry with him. Like,
I would have
really
liked him to stick even if he was a bad guy and he came around in the end. Is that considered a good guy? I don't know. He did basically set a lot of people up for slaughter no matter what way you look at it. So he has bad tendencies.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting too, because getting into what's actually going on with him is obviously, like, he has cancer and he's going to die and that's why he wants to become a vampire. Did anyone actually feel bad for him, considering that he was setting up everybody else to be killed?
I didn't want to.
Did you?
I didn't want to, but I absolutely did, because it was stupid to feel this way. But, like, I think I got overrun by the fact that he was also cute and probably gay, and I was like,
I was going to say, Mitch, you didn't even need to say that for me to know where you're at about that. I've known you for too long.
We're to that point, Natalie.
You are biased about who you care about.
Yes, that's very true.
Okay. Brittany, what about you?
I think that I had the exact same reaction as, I don't know if it was because I was watching Buffy have this reaction or, like, I actually felt it, but, like, I was torn because he was saying, like, I kind of, once he was, like, so determined, I'm like, well, something's clearly wrong with him, like, to where he needs to die but become immortal somehow because something else is going on. And when he told Buffy, I was like, I kind of saw it coming, like, a few seconds before he said it. But I felt bad, but also at the same time, I'm like, that's not the way to go about doing this. Like, you don't have to kill 15 to 20 people in order to save yourself to be immortal, and no one's going to like you or respect you, and you're going to be at the bottom of the food chain anyway. So yeah, I was torn. I don't know if he deserved to die. I felt bad that he did die, but at the same time, I was like, well, you were kind of a bad guy. So I don't know. I guess I was really torn. I still kind of don't know how to process how I feel about him, but he's gone, so
yeah.
Xander 2.0. He would have been such an improved version of him for the fact that he's not interested in Buffy.
But he would have been with Spike, and I don't know if he would have been happy or if that's what he wanted.
I'm just not sure. Because he was like, you know, when you're faced with like your life ending,
right.
I don't know how he would have been when he came back. Like Buffy said, it wouldn't have been him. It would have been just someone else living in that shell of him.
Like, I'm still on the pilot where I'm holding on to the fact that I want Jesse to not be, a mean vampire. That hit me pretty bad, too, for some reason. I don't know why. Well, I know why. Okay, Natalie. God damn it. Moving on.
Well, I was going to say, like, that concept that Brittany just said about, you know, the way Buffy keeps telling this to people, that you die and a monster with your face sets up shop in you.
Yeah.
You know, you've learned more about that. You know, she's kind of saying, you know, it walks like you, it talks like you, it remembers your life. In your opinion, is that still you? Or, like, do you believe the way that Buffy tells it? Like, you know, she's got this one perspective of it from being, you know, bad. And, you know, like, and then we've got Angel. We kind of don't know, you know, we've got the difference between his, you know, dramatic dark past and then who he is once he's got his soul back, and like he still refers to that as him, like I did a lot of stuff, not just like when I didn't have my soul, a demon, like it's not separate, like it's still his brain. So how do you guys sort of see it? Do you buy Buffy's story, or you know, do you think, you know, it would still count as you if it was in your opinion?
See, now I don't know, because I feel like for Spike Buffy's logic works, but I feel like for Angel it's more complicated, and I don't know if I've paid enough attention or given it that much thought until right at this moment.
What makes you think it worked for Spike?
Because I feel like Spike wasn't, like, the demon part that Buffy was saying, like, you know, walks like you, talks like you, but isn't you, is what's actually in Spike just because he's so evil. I don't think that evil of a person was walking around with that awful blonde hair before that. But with Angel, I feel like he was a good guy and then became a bad guy and then sort of worked his way back, but I don't know how he worked his way back from the lure of the dark side, for lack of a better phrasing.
Well, I don't know. I'll say about Spike, pretty much everything he does is based on the strength of his personality rather than evil or not evil or demon or not demon. Like, he has one of the strongest personalities on the show, and that's something to sort of pay attention to in when you're thinking about, like, you know, how evil a demon can be, or what's the demon and what's a person and stuff like that. Like, Spike is the closest thing to a person that you've had from, like, a non-souled vampire, and he kind of changes the game a bit. So it's just something to watch out for, I think.
You know, Natalie, I'd argue that we had Darla was the first of that chorus.
I suppose, yeah, no, that's true, that's true. Yep, and there's definitely, yeah, that's definitely a good point. And she's, again, someone else from Angel's past. Like, you know, so we've got Drew, Spike, and Darla, who all knew Angel when he was bad, basically.
I love that was an episode title, wasn't it?
when she was bad, yes.
Yeah, close.
Yes, that's right.
I love plots in pop culture where you try and understand what soul is and to what point you can rely on it to be evil or good. I love that. Harry Potter, Kingdom Hearts do that, and I think that this is going to set up a really good, long, strung-out plot for me to become interested in, to see why Spike, Drusilla, and Darla were different than Pork and Beans. I don't know, like, just there's something different. They have feelings, they have emotions, there's something about them.
Yeah. I would say the gray areas in Buffy, like, Buffy does them so well, and that's why you can spend so long talking about this sort of thing, because there are so many layers. And I think this thing with Ford, Brittany, your reaction was perfect, because you're like, it didn't give him a reason to do this, but at the same time, like, you do feel bad because he's dying and he's desperate, and it's just that gray area that makes it so interesting. But I want to keep talking about Spike for just another minute. Natalie, I know that you definitely want to weigh in here, but Spike, I haven't actually talked about him too much either. Like, I obviously did the Halloween episode, but we didn't spend a lot of time talking about Spike in that, you know, versus some of the bigger points that happened in that episode. But my favorite thing about Spike is, like, he's not an idiot. Like, he is smart, and he's also a little, well, maybe more than a little, he's arrogant, but I think he can also decide when it's best to run away. Like, he's not afraid to run away in order to save his life, to attack somebody again another day. But what did you think about his entrance of, you know, coming into the basement? And obviously he had different plans than Ford had. And or even Ford was kind of aware, but the other ones definitely didn't know what was going on.
I mean, it's not terribly surprising. Like, I didn't really, you know, Spike is the kind of person who would definitely find these people who are deluded about being vampires. Like, he would not have any respect for them, whereas he may have some respect for someone like Ford, you know, wanting to preserve his life for a good reason. Because another thing about Spike is he loves being alive. He loves the small pleasures of this world of being alive. Like, so, like, he relishes in that. So he might appreciate that, though he clearly did think that guy was an idiot as well when he, you know, Ford's whole thing about, like, oh, you know, his storytelling aspect and, like, how he got this fantasy idea of how things happen. I don't know. Like, it's, I don't really know. It's sort of nothing less or more than I would have expected of him to not want all of those idiots as his minions, if you know what I mean. But he did honor the bargain with Ford, you know, like he.
Yeah, that was my question, actually, because maybe they said this, maybe it was just implied, but, like, why didn't he just suck him dry?
Because he's not, they made a deal and he stuck to it. He's not, like, I don't see, he's not that bad. I mean, he is, but, you know, he's like, okay, this kid's smart enough to figure out, like, you know, something that, you know, figure out something that would save his life. Like, good for him, you know, good for him. And yeah, he did bring us the Slayer. He did everything he was meant to do. We fucked up, but he still did it. And Spike's like, yeah, I guess not. Why not? Why not just make him a vampire? Like, you know, plus a little bit more trouble for the Slayer.
Yeah, no, he probably knew that Buffy was just going to kill him anyway, and that would hurt Buffy even more, because she'd have to kill him.
And I wonder, well, he has his memories from being a person before. He doesn't have his feelings, so we're in this iffy soul area, but I don't know if he would understand rising up. Maybe there's a slight transition period where he'd be like, I was just staked by Buffy, I am dust, goodbye. And then that was his final thought. And that's pretty dark, too. Have all this go down, and then Buffy following through with her, if you do this, I will kill you, promise. It was very sad. Well, so, and I think Spike sees some kind of benefit more than just torturing Buffy and or Ford more. I think that he could have seen not only another vampire, but specifically Ford, someone that knows Buffy, as a vampire being beneficial. So he probably just threw it up to the wind and was like, let's just see if he makes his way back to my lair from his grave. If he's too much of a nuisance, I'll just stick him in that cage and burn him alive. Whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I hadn't thought of that before.
What about the fact that Buffy did let him die? Like, he let everyone else escape. You know, she got everyone else out. And, you know, she said, you know, we've got to come back, like, for the body. Do you think that that was her way? You know, do you think that that was harsh? Or do you think that that was her sort of, she knew she was going to stake him as a vampire, and it's kind of giving him the death that he wanted and not letting him have to go through that cancer thing. Do you think it was compassionate at all?
Oh, yeah. Mercy kill. Because this way he doesn't have to go through chemotherapy if that's his choice, or, you know, pass from, like, liquefying the brain, as he describes.
Yeah. Karen?
That always felt very cold to me. I can definitely see the other side of that. And, like, obviously I don't want to think negatively about Buffy, but something just never quite sat right with me the way that she handled that.
It read negatively. The way she acts in that scene reads, you know, cold, distant. I've been burnt too many times. I like to try and look for the silver lining, Karen. I'm hoping there's a positive light here.
It is compassionate, because, like, when Buffy doesn't really just let people die. Like, the thing, Buffy seems to have this idea that, like, if you are a human being, you are intrinsically not evil and therefore deserve to not die. Whereas, you know, and vampires are intrinsically evil, or demons are intrinsically evil and do need to die. The fact that she let him die, to me, the only reason that she let him die is because he had, you know, she, he was going to have a much worse death, and, you know, if she did, if she hadn't known that he was dying of brain cancer, he, you know, she wouldn't have just let him die just because he did something shitty and was going to be, you know, responsible for other people dying. I still think she would have been like, you're a human, therefore you have to have the rights that a human has, and I can't kill you or let you die. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
That's definitely possible. I just never read it that way, but I can definitely see that side.
I think we're all forgetting, too, something that will make me a lot less enamored with him. He had the great makings of any given serial killer, and because he has that kind of Hannibal Lecter vibe to him. He would, I mean, just as happily eat people if you knew that that's how he would turn into a vampire. I don't know. He had a lot of screws missing. I don't know if this was because, I mean, this is a big can of worms that we won't open, I guess, but, like, you know, if the tumor was affecting his brain to the point where it had a personality change, or if this was just him doing his bucket list of things I've always wanted to do, but I couldn't because I wasn't dying. So time to kill everyone and be a murderous freak. I don't know. It's just, it's hard to feel bad for him, but it isn't. It's so, the actor did a good job. I'll give him that.
I just always read it as him being very desperate. He didn't want to die.
Not sociopathic.
Do you think he even believed in the vampire, like, Kool-Aid gang, or did he kind of just use them as a means to an end? Like, oh, I'm going to pretend to be in with you. I know the truth about vampires.
He used them,
you know, definitely. Offer you guys all up. Yeah.
How long do you think he was able to, like, sit in town, not tell Buffy, not have her see him, gain a relationship with Spike, and gain all of these followers? Like, they had quite the setup here. They were welding things. Like, they were getting into it. It means, to me, like, months in advance, he was just off the grid, not telling his family where he was going in his final days unless they were supporting his vampirism. It just, that part feels like a, I'm not going to say a plot hole, it just feels like I needed more to get behind this whole concept of this episode, because it's very broad.
I think that information is superfluous, though. Like, it's not important. I mean, clearly, yes, they had spent a long time setting up that entire trap and the entire, like, plot behind that, but it's clear that, like, he was just willing to do whatever needed to be done. But I want to jump ahead into favorite scenes and favorite lines right now. My favorite scene was when Buffy figures out that Ford was lying because she sees the vampire in the library that he supposedly killed and figures out on her own that he lied to her and what that means. And she doesn't question it. She doesn't lie to herself. She immediately believes it. And that was just like, it was such a strong moment.
Not Ford. Yeah, this couldn't possibly be true.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that was just a really strong moment for Buffy. Natalie, what's yours?
My favorite was when they went to the vampire club and Angel was just reacting to that girl and her stories about, like, why the vampires are, like, the best. And just his face just being like, are you serious? Like, I can't. And then him trying to be like, you know, they know nothing about vampires. They don't know how vampires talk, you know, walk. They don't know how vampires dress. And the guy walks in dressed the same as him.
How spot on was that?
So funny. So funny. I love him so much. He's so ridiculous. And I love him so much. And I can't believe how much I love him, because it's just, I thought I hated him. This is like a weird year for me. I thought I hated Star Wars. I thought I'd hated Angel. I don't hate either of those things. And it's just, oh, it was so good. And just his disbelief is just amazing, and I just love him.
I appreciate David's somewhat dry comedic timing. He's able to
He's a great actor. Yeah. That's the thing. I used to think he was, like, wooden and boring. I'm not reading it like that now. Now I'm reading it as, like, this is on purpose, and it's freaking hilarious.
Yes.
So, yeah, and I've seen him in other stuff, and he is a very good actor. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Brittany, what about you?
Mine was when Willow was trying to hide the fact that she was working with Angel, and Buffy was like, we talked about you consuming coffee, like, you need to calm down, and she's like, doesn't know what to do, and she's like trying to get to the library, and I loved it so much.
Yeah, she's so funny too.
I liked when he came in her room as well, like Angel and her in her room as part of that as well was hysterical.
It was a bit saucy, might I say.
Oh, I'll get to that in a second.
Okay, so my favorite scene is when Buffy thinks at her feet and captures Drew. I love that she puts two and two together so quickly here, and she just does, like, these awesome kick, flip, jump kazams up there, and she captures Drew, and I don't know exactly why Spike brought Drew in the first place, but still, it was a good enough plot point to have me understand that Spike was one-upped by the Slayer once more from her knowledge and or friends and family protecting her.
Yeah. All right, favorite lines. Mine's at the very end, actually. It's between Giles and Buffy. And Buffy's kind of complaining about all this stuff. And Giles says, I believe that's called growing up. And Buffy says, I'd like to stop then, okay? And this is how I feel every single day of my life. So I feel you, Buffy. Natalie?
Mine was... I just mentioned the scene in Angel, in Willow's room when Angel comes to see her, and he kind of talks about how crazy he's acting, you know, because Willow's like, Angel, don't bite me, but you acting jealous. And he's like, I know, it's so weird, right? And how he's kind of all turned upside down by Buffy. And, you know, he says, things used to be pretty simple. 100 years just hanging out, feeling guilty. I really honed my brooding skills. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this is the moment where you know that Angel is meant to be hysterically funny and not like
I did not remember him saying that line. I never in a million years would have thought he would say a line like that, and when he did, same thing, it just clicked for
like,
me.
He knows he's ridiculous. Like, I think, yeah, he knows that he just doesn't know how to live, basically, and but he's just rolling with it. He's just like, whatever, I'm awkward. Oh. Like, I think I really loved the moment earlier on as well when they were playing at the club and playing pool and stuff at the club, where Angel is like, you know, they're there and they're kind of trying to include him as like a buddy. You know, they're kind of like, it's okay, Angel, we could still play pool. Like, you know, Willow just wants to hang out and play pool with Angel, and then he leaves and, you know, without noticing, and Willow's like, oh, you made him do that thing where he's gone. And it's like they're trying to like make him into a real boy and stuff because he does not know how to function in society. And I find it hysterically funny. I don't know why. It's just great. So, yeah.
Brittany?
Anyway, let's move this along so I can talk about my favorite person on the entire show named Giles. And my favorite line from this episode is when that vampire that Ford didn't kill leaves the library, and Giles is like in shock, and he's just like, a book, she took one of my books. And he's so upset about it. Like, doesn't even know which one it is yet, but he's just upset that a book is gone.
Yeah. Mitch, you have a Giles line too.
Yeah, I figured everyone was gonna be angry that I took this one and the Angel one. Natalie, you're welcome. I'll give that Angel one to you. Mine's at the end of the episode where Buffy says, lie to me, like the title, and he responds, the good guys are always stalwart and true. The bad guys are easily distinguished by their pointy horns or black hats, and we always defeat them and save the day. No one ever dies, and everybody lives happily ever after. Yeah, that's rough.
I love, too, that Buffy just follows it up with liar.
Yeah, because it kind of adds a comedic twist that you need, because it's such a dark note to end on. And if you don't end on something a little bit, like, kind of happy and da-da-da-da-da-da, it loses, I think, the tween audience that's tuning in. They're like, ew, the show's too adult. So I think Buffy brings it down just to where it needs to be Buffy the years of high school. I'm assuming she's going to go off out of high school eventually, but I legitimately do not know. So, if so, I'd be happy to see these dark moments kind of, like, mature with the show and just stay the way they are.
I feel bad for Brittany that we just talked and she didn't get to say anything about Giles.
That's okay. We're going to talk about Giles a lot in Episode 8, The Dark Age. So, this synopsis reads, in this episode, Giles's past comes back to haunt him, more of possess him, as Buffy aerobicizes a man is murdered outside the library by a demon lady. When Giles's information is found on the dead man, Giles is brought in for questioning by the police. Recognizing a tattoo on the dead man, Giles realizes that a demon from his past has returned to finish off a group of Giles's friends that got high off of demonic possession. Ethan, the Halloween costume shop owner, shows up at the library endangering a stubborn Buffy. As the Scoobies run to Buffy's aid, the dead man reincarnates and joins the library party. After a scuffle, the demon is transferred into an unassuming Miss Callender. Later that night, Buffy arrives just in the nick of time to rescue Giles from Demon Callender's murderous wrath. Rushing to Ethan's aid, Buffy is stabbed in the back by the magician, tied up and tattooed against her will with the demon's insignia. The Scoobies arrive and have the demon transferred into the already demonized Angel, thus ending Igon's reign. Ethan escapes, forcing Buffy into an expensive and painful tattoo removal procedure. Yes, that is the worst part about this episode. Okay, really quick, Monster of the Week, which, you know, sometimes we highlight, sometimes we don't. This one is particularly interesting because it definitely looks like a zombie right up front.
Okay,
but
yes,
it's so much more than that. Mitch, you sound like you have a lot to say about this.
Yes, because Karen, you're, as I remember, a Walking Dead enthusiast, and you might you might recognize the fact that the only good thing about The Walking Dead right now, or for a while, has been they do such a good makeup job on that show. Always, always, always. So when I'm coming into here and I'm seeing something that's meant to be a zombie or whatever, I was so disappointed, because I was expecting to see, like, you know, like a jaw half dislocated and then, like, an eyeball missing. Just something really good. And then this just, it really looked, I think it looked even cheesier and more dated than the show is ever. It really took me out of the show to see this makeup job. I was not into that prosthetic.
That is Buffy's tone, unfortunately. I really feel like this falls in line with Buffy and just what Buffy is and the time period and everything. But Brittany, did you have a problem with this, or can you only think of Giles?
Well, I mean, yeah, I can only think of Giles. But also, I feel like this, it wasn't a zombie. It was a demonic possession. So it wasn't like, I don't watch anything with zombies. The most recent thing I saw with zombies was Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So, I mean, the makeup didn't bother me. I'm sort of like honed in on it fitting, like you were saying, Karen, like with what Buffy is. So I'm kind of like, whatever you give me, I'm just going to take it, literally take it face value, because I don't know what it's supposed to look like or what's going on in Josh Whedon's head or what their makeup department had access to. So it was fine. It didn't bother me.
Can you imagine if they came in with some like Walking Dead level prosthetics? It would have not fit at all. So this was really the only thing that we could have.
Yeah. What I like about my supernatural shows are the realism of their monsters as much as you can to make me think that these things are real, to give me nightmares. And I find it surprising, Karen, that you say the tone of Buffy is always to be, I guess, kind of hokey or whatnot, because I think that if we're comparing even, like, something I find extremely hokey, the Teen Wolf werewolf makeup from, like, season one to this, I think this is even better than that makeup when they're turning to vampires. It looks, you know, legitimately horrifying and not too accentuated, and it makes me, not, like, scared, but it alerts me. But then when I see something like this, I kind of just laugh. It kind of reminds me of, like, Moloch the Destroyer, who wants little nun boys or whatever. It just was not okay. It made me really upset.
Okay, first of all, I don't think that it's hokey. I think it's 90s. I think that they didn't have the budget to do what The Walking Dead does. And if they did have something like The Walking Dead, kids wouldn't watch this show. That's freaking terrifying. I'm scared every week watching it. That's the point of The Walking Dead. That's not the point of Buffy. So I think it's fine. I also think Teen Wolf season one is fine. So like, step off on that.
Oh, Karen. I knew you liked bad things. I knew you liked bad things, but the makeup.
Well, obviously, that's the point.
Okay.
all right. But I do want to jump into the most important part here, which is Giles's past. I'm really interested in knowing what the newbies think of this. And then Natalie, I'll get to you because I'm really interested in, you know, revisiting this for us having already seen it. So Brittany, first of all, we learned that Giles used to be in a cult and used to get high via demonic possession, basically. Did this blow your mind?
Listen, my favorite book of all time is The Secret History by Donna Tartt, where they have Bucknell stuff in the woods and things get crazy. And literally that's Giles's past. And it just added to the fact that he is my favorite character. It solidified it. I will never like any other character more than I like Giles now. There's also that picture that Xander found, and it just,
when he was a rock star.
Oh my, everything about Giles blew my mind. I actually, when amazing, I watched the Halloween episode or whatever two episodes were last week, I went into work and I told one of my coworkers, I was just like, what is this Ripper thing? I need to know more right now. And she laughed at me. She laughed at me and said, just keep watching the show. And yeah, so I watched this episode this morning and I messaged Karen. And she was like, we'll talk about this later. But I thought it was brilliant. It was so unexpected when I heard that one-off about him being the Ripper and him knowing Ethan, and then Ethan came back in a big way, and how Giles was not just this, they were joking around in the beginning, he had tweed diapers. Like, he's not that person. He had this, wild streak, and something went wrong, and I feel like now he sort of, has this, personal penance to help the Slayer because of what happened in his past, and he was just... The acting was so good, where he was so distraught and torn up, and he looked like a mess, and I loved it. It was so messy.
Yeah.
And it was just such a good storyline, and I just hope that there's more to it than this. I hope it's just not over yet. I hope something else happens, because it's just so good. Plus, Ethan's still running around, so you never know.
Hey, Brittany. What did you think about that scene where Giles is washing his face and he looks up in the mirror and says, you're back? Doesn't he look like he's transforming? Like, the way they lit it and the way that he, kind of scowls, it makes me feel like he's turning into the demon right then and there. And I had kind of an epiphany that was pretty much just Giles' actor just showing us that was happening, essentially. And I think that that's amazing.
Everything was so good. Giles just coming undone, even if Giles has one shirt button undone, his whole character falls apart. And I think it's just so brilliant the way that he's able to do that. Like, one small little detail about him is out of place, and you could tell that he's a mess. And
he's human now.
So good.
He's so real. you feel like you could meet this guy and understand him, and he's not just a caricature anymore of, oh, the bookworm. I'm really starting to see why you pick the characters you like, Brittany. And I feel like, from the way you're speaking, this might be, if not the new Boomy, better than.
Don't go too far.
Don't overstep.
Yeah. But what I find really interesting about Giles is, from the beginning, they set him up as a rigid, stalwart, and true character, unchanging, exactly who he is, right up in front, proud of the person that he is. You instantly feel like you know him, except you don't. And it's so brilliant the way that it unfolds like this. And that's why I'm so interested in the newbies, because, Natalie and I can't go back and experience this for the first time. We already knew that this was coming.
That Giles has, punk ass past.
Yeah. So, and it makes rewatching really interesting, but it's also fascinating to see you guys be like, yeah, Giles is this and Giles is that, except, oh my God, all of a sudden, no, he's not. He's got this crazy past. And I think, it's really cool that you're taking to that. And actually, Brittany, we were talking about this before, thinking back on some of his scenes with Buffy, especially them fighting, and wondering, is Giles holding back? Is he faking any part of himself because he doesn't want to show who he used to be? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so immediately I sent Karen, I watched Halloween and she wanted my reaction because I wasn't on the episode for that. And I sent her a string of all of these messages all about Giles, not literally nothing else that happened in that episode, just all about Giles. And I'm like, but what does that mean that he's holding back? Is he not showing his true strength because he has this past that at the point we didn't know about anything at that point when I watched it. And I'm like, he has to be holding back a little bit because he clearly knows a lot more than he's letting Buffy in on. And so Buffy, the viewers, is sort of taking him at oh, he's doing his job. He's not that great at it. He's book smart, not street smart. But I feel like there's so much more now that he's just he's not going to full on fight her. He's going to let her have the upper hand until she can't anymore. He'll really put out his full strength when she needs it. And so I just don't know. He's still, when he was beating up Ethan, I was and he's just polishing his ring after he kicks the crap out of him. I was where's this guy been? What have you been doing in there? You just let Buffy toss you across the table wearing all that padded gear. And those have been my favorite scenes up until now, because it was just Giles being Giles. He was that character. And now that he's not that character, I love him so much more.
So does this give you an appreciation, a further appreciation for Giles? Or is this like too shocking? Is it too out of character?
No, it's not, because I always saw a darker side to him. And it's funny, too, because I remember when super fans were like, no, do not talk about that. Because during The Witch, I was like, he's doing magic, and it just happened. Can everyone do that? And then everyone was like, no, Mitch, just stop. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm onto something here. So now that I'm seeing the full picture that was developed, even for the pilot, it's nice. It's so nice to see a slow burn in a show. I love the confidence that TV shows can have when they're a little bit ballsy and they feel that they can hold off on a big reveal that they started in the pilot all the way up until the middle of the next season. That's pretty amazing. And I give strong kudos to the writers for dropping just the right amount of hints in here. Because, hey, you know what? Buffy can be cheesy. It can be very 90s. I love it for that. But I also love it for its tiny, very minuscule, almost Veronica Mars-like plot points like this. They come up out of nowhere, and then they blow up in your face. And then you look back, and you're like, how could I not have seen that this whole time? I think it's really good writing. And I'm impressed, as Brittany is, with Giles' actor. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Are you serious? Mitchell, he's one of the most, crossover into 12,000 other fandoms of actors in this show.
Really? What else is he in?
Yeah. His name is, Tony Head. Anthony Stewart Head was how he was credited when he was Buffy. I think he now just goes by Anthony Head.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But he's in a lot of things.
I think it's Supernatural.
No, I don't know about Supernatural. No. He's in Merlin. He's in a ton of other stuff, though, as well.
Interesting.
But what you were saying, Mitch, about all these, you know, minuscule details and stuff, I think that's what makes Buffy so rewatchable. Yeah. What makes it so gratifying to go back and being like, oh my God, I see the beginning of this thread way earlier than I did, you know, before. And you always notice new things. And Natalie, I think all of the super fans, especially Caitlin, we're feeling so many feelings about Giles. And it's really nice to be revisiting it, especially when the newbies appreciate those nuances too.
Yeah, I have a question for when you guys were watching it, because I have been bringing this up. All right, my coworker is a huge Buffy fan, and she understands how I'm watching it, so she's been really good about letting me vent with what I know.
good.
So thank you to her. But yeah, so I was asking her, I'm like, well, when you were watching this when it was on TV, did you care at all about Giles? Because I feel like if I was watching this as a 13, 14-year-old, on TV, I would be like, get this old man off the screen. I want more Angel and Spike. Whereas watching it now, I'm like, they could take a week off. I just want all Giles all the time. But I feel like maybe that's because I'm older, or if you guys thought that Giles was an interesting enough character from the start.
When I was in high school, people liked Giles.
Okay. That's good for
it
me.
I don't know about what your friend said, but yeah, no. When I was in high school, he was not the adult. Not at all. He was very much appreciated.
I don't think it's unnatural, Brittany, to ever have an older actor, character, whoever, that we're going to get into, because I remember as a kid being very into Uncle Iroh for Atla, and then, you know, going into Boy Meets World or whatever, I was always like, Mr. Feeny is cool, let's hang out with him some more, even if he kind of creepishly follows them around to college. It was always fun to me to see, honestly, how the past generation affects the present, if we're calling Giles the past generation. But we'll call Buffy the active generation, and how she's still going on with Brittany wrote rude. You know what? It's okay. He's already had his demonic highs. He's here to protect Buffy now. She's the active one. He's more passive these days, but not right now. It's great. It's great to see his past come back up, and I'm really digging the I was going to say something that's going to sound really dirty. I'm really digging the old dude, but I stopped myself, and there you go.
I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't feel anything when he rolled up his sleeves and showed his tattoo. I was like, there is, oh, Giles.
It's kind of like a weird, it's not
weird.
Natalie, you know how we think that.
Don't say anything about Will Schuster.
No, it's not. It's not. It is not.
All right.
We think Sam is sexier with his clothes on.
Yes. Sam. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
In Glee. So I'm following this with Giles. Cause I think he's sexier with his clothes on because he's just so smart that it's definitely one of those talk nerdy to me things. It's like, I don't want to have you sexualized. I don't want to have you, I don't want to see him with his calendar getting sexy. It's almost disturbing to me because I don't see him in that way sexy. It's like, I find you incredibly appealing for the knowledge you can share with me. And I guess it kind of just relates to Sam for the fact that, people I find sexy with their clothes on.
Thank you so much. I don't want to talk to Giles like this anymore.
I will give you guys a small, tiny little tidbit to look forward to. There is a moment, a couple of seasons from now, in which Giles's sexiness with his clothes on is shockingly confronting for a couple of characters that really shouldn't find him attractive, both because of their age and other reasons.
Yes, I cannot wait.
So you have, Karen, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't want it though. That's still kind of creepy because it's creepy on anyone else's end that finds Giles sexy.
He's doing a thing and some people see him and they're like, oh, that's creepy.
read that book.
What I want to say about Giles specifically is when I first watched it, it was definitely about, because when you watch this show, you're kind of meant not to be Buffy, obviously, but you're seeing this world through her eyes. I always saw Giles as a father figure and, of course, loved him because of that, but also because of the knowledge he possesses. It's so endearing. And so, yeah, he was, the old guy on the screen or whatever, and I probably was, super into Angel way more than Giles, and I'm not speaking romantically, just, wanting to see them on my screen more, but even
Angel
then,
is older than Giles anyway.
Well, yeah, technically. You know what I mean. But the point is, it never detracted from the story. He was such a huge asset. But given that, even now, being older, rewatching it with you guys, I keep falling more and more in love with Giles. He's so great and his character is so interesting. And I think there's nothing better than that, to know that you think you know this person, to find out they're completely different. But also, he had that past, that horrific past, and he did those things, and he's still the Giles we know and love today. And I think that's really important to remember.
Mm.
Yeah.
Going to Miss Calendar, because obviously she gets wrapped up in this whole plot point. She gets possessed by this demon. And I'm really curious how you guys took that. Were you genuinely worried about her, newbies? Or were you they'll find a way to save her?
I was scared because it feels like Miss Calendar has a ticking time bomb. And the fact that she's a love interest to a main character, that is just ripe opportunity to rip our hearts out and stomp all over it. Especially if said main character has to kill off their love interest, it's even worse.
Jesus, you're morbid.
Well, also,
it's gonna happen. Someone is going to have to kill their love interest that's a main character. I know it's gonna happen. That's the actual formula of these shows. That's the way they make you feel. It is. It's like you turned dark. Or I had to because the demon was inside of you like this. Or it'll happen. I know it's going to happen.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Giles is getting just comfortable enough with her being around and starting to come into his own, his feelings with her and stuff like that. And now it's just I still am not solidified in feeling connected to her. I feel like she's in their minds right now is still a dispensable character. So I'm this is how she's going to go out and it's going to be horrible. And the way that the final conversations between Buffy and Giles have been going, in the final moments of every episode, I feel this is right on par for them to have to go through something this awful right now, because that's just how the show's been going. And I was I hope they don't kill her off this early, because I think that her and Giles still have a lot more to go through and she's good for him.
But would, have but, that, would, mm-hmm. it, would it have not been fitting, though? Because the last main character death we've had, arguably, is Jesse and Darla. I don't know. I don't really don't count her. We're not really sympathetic to her other than her final angel. But to me, this would have been a great time to do it.
Technically, it was Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm still not over the Master's death, so I'm still
the Master. Was he your main character death that affected you? So I would have been fine with this because
he was wonderful.
I would have been fine with this because it would have been Giles' past coming back to haunt him in a very strong way and killing off his future. And that would have been a really strong way to kickstart this series into a brand new mode where, like, everyone is on the slate. Like, it does not matter who you are. The good guys will not survive always. And this, and it would be even more strong, too, simply from the fact that Giles was just saying, you know, like, no one dies right in the end of the episode. He's lying to Buffy. That would have been amazing to follow that right on up with that. Because it feels like they're leading up to someone, like a major death is coming. That just seems like a really lame prediction, but I feel like they're specifically, like, climbing up to it. I expect the calendar to be it. I really did. I don't know who it's going to be at this point, and I don't know if it's going to come up in the coming episodes, but definitely this season they're going to have to kill off, like, a Scooby or something. I don't even know. What do you think, Britt?
Well, I feel like what you were saying was right on par with what I was thinking, but also I think that they achieved the impact of Giles's past affecting Giles's future happiness without having to kill her, because they killed the relationship, basically.
Yes.
Like, and it was so impactful watching her flinch and back up when he went to go just touch her shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I felt that movement. I was like, oh my God. Like, I couldn't believe it was happening. Like, I felt so bad for him. And not just because I like Giles, but just because, like you were saying, there's like that whole giant message, like, no matter how much you change and do all these good things and, like, commit yourself to something else, like, that past is always there. Yeah. And that's coming up with Angel. It's coming up with Buffy. She's leaving, like, all these places, but she goes to the Hellmouth and she's doing that. Like, you know, it's just, like, you can never outrun it. And, like, these characters, it's, like, consistently messing with their futures. Like, she has Xander and Willow, but they're constantly in danger now. She wants to have a relationship with Angel, but that is constantly in jeopardy because of Angel's past and her future as the Slayer. And then you have Giles with his – it was just – it's really playing well. And I think I'm, you know, finally in the Buffy zone because I want to keep watching episodes.
I'm with you. Yes. It's a point because it's starting – there's always a point with shows to me, like when I was watching Grey's Anatomy or Pretty Little Liars or whatnot, where you start to feel – it's more, I guess, serialized, the right term. Like, the canon of each episode starts to follow more. It's not just Monster of the Week.
It stops being episodic and it starts being arcs. Yeah.
And it just, a show needs to be able to evolve into that. Sometimes they come a lot quicker. I think Buffy took its good course in getting there. But, Britt, do you think that Callender now has some kind of character immunity from the fact that she had her opportunity to die? We had, like, almost a fake out with that, especially with Angel choking her out. So, does she still have an opportunity to die in this season? I'm between her and Xander personally, because I know someone's dying. I'm positive. It's nothing because I've heard of spoiler, I promise you. It's really just because I have a gut feeling. It's one of those. And I mean, I'm more still towards Xander, but do you think she's still in danger after this episode?
Yeah, because I think that they live on the Hellmouth. Everyone's in danger all the time. But I think it would be even more impactful if they killed her off this season and her and Giles never had the chance to, like, reconcile or anything like that.
Or right when they did. Like, or as she's dying, they do. Ooh. I should write the show.
Should you?
There'd be a lot of ships that shouldn't be, though. I'll give you that much. Cuffy, cough, cough.
Too much cuffy.
Listen, there's never enough cuffy. Okay, Karen, sorry. No more tangents, I promise.
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask that question about Callender because I think it's really interesting the way that they progress that relationship. I also find it really fascinating that Miss Callender for so long has been like, no, this isn't a big deal. And this was a really good, you know, second date when we almost died and there was like a Frankenstein monster and stuff like that. And then she gets to the point where it's too much. I think, like, it's so human. It's so realistic.
And I think part of that as well, it's not just this is too much, it's that this is your fault. Like, it's not like, oh my God, you're incidentally wrapped up in this stuff and I'm going to help you out. Like, that's how she's been so far. This is, you're responsible for this. This was your recklessness and everything about this is your fault, basically, which is, I think, why she's a bit more like, get away from me.
I never really read it that way just because this happened so long ago and he feels like such a different person. But
yeah,
clearly I'm in the minority here because it sounded like Brittany, you in particular, too, thought of it that way.
Yeah, not so much like she's like, get away from me. I think that she's finally like, yeah, I'm going to need a little bit of time to process all of this now. Mm-hmm. Like before it was sort of like, oh, this is like a side hobby for him. He's never really in any danger. He's just helping out this other girl, yeah, but he has to have other priorities.
But, you know,
yeah, and
he this is something that was due to him.
Yeah, so like he can have other priorities, like, you know, like you can take a night off, Giles, and come watch Monster Trucks with me, even if you don't like it. But she's starting to realize, like, no, this is always going to be the thing that I'm led back to, and I'm not sure if I'm ready to do that. Like, don't worry. He literally can't separate his life from this. And now I just went through this whole, like, you know, demonic possession, and I'm a little touchy.
You know what, Brittany, don't worry. All she needs to do is go naked mud wrestling, smoke a little peyote, she'll come back nice and
fresh.
Oh
my God.
She'll be good to go.
And I'm sure that's the cure for everything.
It is, probably. But Giles, is he a virgin? Are we meant to understand that this is that important of a relationship to him because he's a virgin?
Did you hear about his past?
No!
Where do you think that leather jacket got him in Oxford?
Like, what the hell is wrong with you, Mitch? Like,
he's so nervous around her, and it's weird because it's like you're a grown man. You both are consensual adults who want to have sex.
He's clearly been single for a long time, and is very awkward around people, you know, and you know, he doesn't remember how to be chill, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, he used to have to get possessed by a demon in order to get chill. You know, clearly he's the kind of guy that needs some medicinal marijuana to be, like, constantly in a state of, like, being chill, because he's not at all chill. He needed drugs or demons to make him.
Is that a thing?
Such.
Do people really, like, I don't know if this is, like, is there a thing where people in the real world believe they can become high from a possession? Like, is this something I should have known of before? Because it seemed so weird.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that evangelical Christians do that. Like, speaking in tongues and...
The whole point of, like, they were saying, like, you know, like, the Greeks would have the bacchanals where they'd summon, you know, spirits and stuff like that. And it was basically them just being, like, really drunk in the woods. But, yeah, but that was the whole point of those, like, gatherings and stuff was to, like, you know, you're summoning something, like, greater than yourself and, like, enjoying the ride that you have when you're with that spirit or whatever, even though it was probably just drunkenness. But you are... You know, you're doing something. In this case, there is actual magic involved in this world. So it makes sense that that's something that they toyed around with that was just greater than, you know, smoking pot or whatever they do in Oxford.
And Britt, I think there are big puzzle pieces missing, too, to get us to the Giles we're at today. I don't really know specifically why he came to America, even when he did.
Which is why we need to keep watching.
Which is good. Which is a good thing. And I also don't know what changed him into the bookworm.
They told you that literally the beginning of the first episode.
It was just, I'm here to be your watcher.
Yeah, he's... Okay. If you haven't sort of picked this up by now, I feel quite stressed about it. But yeah, they said he transferred to this school. He used to have a job at a British museum or possibly the British Museum. So he used to have a normal job as a curator where he was like researching probably supernatural stuff in his spare time. But he didn't have an active slayer. Buffy had a different watcher. He was a watcher in waiting, basically. But now he's been assigned a slayer, so he has to go and actively be a watcher.
They must have, like, a newsletter or something to keep up with it. Like, oh, I'm, you know, this is what we're doing with Buffy now, but
yeah,
you're next.
Yeah, he got his Hogwarts letter, basically.
Oh, because I remember him saying that in the pilot. I had the impression he was here before. I don't know why. But I guess that makes sense because he's very awkward with American culture and the internet and things like of that sort. I don't understand, though, how he turned into the bookworm that he maybe once was. I'm not sure. It's a little bit confusing to me that he would drop out of Oxford and be like, no, demonic possession, guys, that's the real deal.
Well, he got into that, and then I think he got lost. Well, this is just my speculation. We might learn more. But I feel like he got so lost and so...
like, you know, out of it that he found comfort in the predictable, like in studying and knowing the facts and knowing everything that could possibly happen. So he just retreated back to that. And he was just like, this is where I'm comfortable. This is where I'm going to be now. No more parties.
That's an excellent theory. I love that, Brittany. I'm subscribing to that.
Good. All right. I want to jump into favorite scenes now, because this, my favorite scene is Willow thinking of Angel to save the day at the end. To be fair, Giles's moments were better than this. Giles's moments in this episode were incredible, but I kind of wanted to leave them to some other people. I really appreciated Willow rushing in there, figuring this out. And then even Angel rushing in there and doing this and, you know, his whole little thing at the end and what he had to say about it. And I think that this was a really good, like, coming together of everybody to save the day and save Miss Callender and Giles and Buffy. And it was just really wonderful. Hmm. Okay. Natalie?
Mine was the first scene when they've got the first moment when they have Ethan tied up into the library and Giles sees him for the first time and he just comes in like totally cold and ruthless and like drags him out of the chair by his ear and everyone around is just going, what the shit is this? Like who, what he do? Like, and just this totally dead cold attitude that he pulls out and everyone, like all of the students and Jenny are just really shocked by it. So I appreciated that.
And especially like Buffy's reaction to that was good really Ripper. Good.
And kind of says to her, like, you know, how he's been acting with her the whole time. It's not like a lie, but just like she never expected that he was had that in him.
Mm-hmm. Brittany?
Just watching Giles come completely undone. I know it's like basically the whole episode, but those were like my favorite moments. Just watching him slowly just become a complete wreck over the episode. It was just, I thought it was amazing and very well done. Plus, Xander presenting that photo of Giles was also fantastic.
That had to have been a real picture of the actor from back in the day, I had to assume, or just some good Photoshop.
I mean, he was cool enough to pull that off. He's a musician as well in real life, so they may have based his punk past on the actor's real punk past.
That's
I don't
cute.
Know.
That's
maybe. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know if the photo is real or Photoshopped, but he is a musician.
Mitch, your favorite scene?
Mine was the fairly advanced CGI during Angel's inner demon battle, namely because it was so much better than any of the real prosthetic that they used for zombie demon lady in the beginning. It was such an improvement, matter of fact, that I was almost convinced that this was something of present-day technology. It looked to me, maybe I'm missing something here, because this is in the 90s, it looked to me fairly advanced. Like, it looked real. Like, the...
Do you mean when the whole head sort of grew over Angel's head? Because I'm like, you don't mean the bit at the beginning where they're just, like, squashing his face around because that looked terrible.
But it looks really good. And, I mean, I also have this strange affinity for normal people dressed in normal clothes but with a demon face. Kind of like the Evil Dead. And it's really fun to see, like, her and just, like, she's wearing, like, a turtleneck or something. But then she's, like, super powerful and evil at the same time. I love just how, like, you know, okay, Zuko here, just, it's there, done. And it's so cute. I love it.
She looked really scary, actually. I really liked her makeup for that.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah. And you're in normal clothes, but you're demonized, and you kind of have, like, your hairstyle still or whatever else. Your features, it has a certain chilling effect to it all.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, favorite lines. I'm going to preface this with, I think that this line in general for Buffy and for life is incredible and possibly one of my favorite lines of the entire series. And that's Giles and Buffy talking at the end. And Buffy says to Giles, I'm so used to you being a grown-up, and then I find out that you're a person. And I kind of almost don't want to, like, say what I think about it, because I think it really speaks for itself. But just their relationship in general, this is taking it to a much deeper place. And I love that this was her reaction to finding out about what Giles used to do.
Yeah. My strongest sort of feelings about this when I watched it, because I wanted this line as well, was just the fact that, like, I'm going to be, like, 30 this year, so I'm pretty old. But just the difference between, like, kind of not necessarily watching this at 15 and watching this at 30, I don't know if I remember this line specifically or not, but the concept of, like, no matter how old you get, at least for me so far, I still feel like the same person. Like, I still feel, I know I'm not, like, I know that there's going to be things about me that have changed, and, you know, the way I process things that I've changed, have changed and stuff like that over time. But I don't feel like, ooh, I grew up, like, I think about things differently or care about things differently. I probably do all those things, but there's no conscious shift of like, oh, I grew up, I was a child, and now I'm an adult, if you know what I mean. And I'm like, that probably keeps happening at 40, 50, 60, 70. And it's kind of shitty that society kind of looks at, you know, old people and are like, they don't have the same emotional range as me, a 25-year-old has, if you know what I mean. Because there's a very ridiculous popular Tumblr text post which just says, it's not a text post, it's a GIF set of I think Dylan Moran, the comedian, and he's like, you start growing up and you realize everyone's faking it. It's just like, I'm not an adult. I'm just a tall child holding a beer, if you know what I mean. And we say that at home a lot. We say this is a tall child holding a beer moment, you know, when we're pretending to be adults and stuff like that. And like, at what age do you get to where you're like, I'm not faking this adulthood thing, if you know what I mean? And it's not necessarily Giles is faking it, but it's kind of an example of Buffy realizing that, like, there's less of a divide between people than you think. And it's mm-hmm. kind of when her and Giles become friends, like, that there isn't, like, a power, so much of a power imbalance, and that they really become friends, I think.
Basically, yeah. All that you're saying, Natalie, is so pertinent in my mind because of the movie Joy with Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper.
I have not seen that. But okay.
That's okay, because that's the whole theme of it all, that you don't really feel like you're an adult because everyone above you will still treat you like you're a kid. Even when you own your own business, you're doing your own thing, you'll still have people you answer to. And I think that that's another way of saying, like, you know, Giles, he doesn't answer to anyone necessarily, but he still has fears, and I think that that's what humanizes him.
Natalie, what's your favorite line?
Well, yeah, mine was the one that you said, so instead of that, I've picked two funny ones because I'm worth it. And it was just, they were both kind of side notes. One was just when Buffy was meant to meet Giles and he never showed up, like, because he was having his breakdown, and, you know, she catches the vampires, like, breaking, you know, trying to basically do a robbery of the blood transfusion delivery, and Angel kind of comes, you know, they don't make a coordinated plan to meet or anything, as usual. Angel just comes and helps out, and she goes, how did you know about this? And he goes, it's delivery day, everybody knows about this. And just the way that he sort of matter-of-factly was like, duh, about it. And I'm like, wow, Angel, your life is not like other people's, and I found it hilarious. And the other, again, was about Xander trying to, you know, helping out with what's going on with Giles. And Buffy says, Xander, how do you feel about digging through some of Giles's personal files and seeing what you can find? And Xander says, I feel pretty good about it. Does that make me a sociopath? Nah. Following on from that, Cordelia being like, what can I do to help? I care about Giles. And I'm like, oh, you're so cute and I love you.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Brittany, I'm surprised you didn't pick a Giles line.
I did it on purpose because I figured I would talk about Giles so much that I didn't, I should pick a funnier line. And so my favorite line was when Buffy goes to see Ethan, and she was just like, you sold me that dress that nearly got me killed. And Ethan just turns to her and, like, nonchalantly, he's like, but you looked great. And I was like, well, she did.
Mitch?
Mine's good old Cordy. She walks in to Giles being questioned by that policewoman, and Cordy goes, oh, great. Can you help me with a ticket? It's totally bogus. It was a one-way street. I was going one way.
Oh, my God. Cordelia.
I wonder about Cordelia. How does she tie her shoes in the morning? I don't understand.
Yeah. Okay. Like we've previously stated, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can do so via email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable, this post on hypeable.com, or any of our other Buffy-centric posts, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com, and please, if you like the podcast, rate us 5 stars on iTunes. If you rate us 5 stars, then I will tie you up and forcibly tattoo you to initiate you into my secret occult club. That's a true story.
Nice.
I do have one that you guys just don't know about. Okay, let's get into listener feedback. Natalie, why don't you take this first one?
Oh, God. Shauna Evans, Nick Love 120. 28 says, please mention Angel's terrible lipstick in Lie to Me in your discussion. I didn't notice it. Sorry. Did anyone else?
No. I just really appreciate that it's Angel's lipstick, because it's just the fact that he would put on lipstick in the first place and it being terrible. I'm trying to pretend it's the character, not the actor.
I feel like it must be like part of the makeup.
Yes, no, that's absolutely what they're saying. I'm trying to take it to the Angel level, because I think it'd be funny to see Angel put on lipstick and do it terribly.
No, I don't think it's that kind of lipstick. We're talking about like makeup, you know, like stage makeup. Yeah. But I did not notice it. The other point that she's made is anyone going back to mention how Danny Strong is now screenplay writer, Oscar nominated, Mockingjay writer. He's also the creator of Empire. She hasn't included that. But no, I don't know. Like, I wasn't on that episode. I guess you guys didn't mention it that much. But yeah, it's also kind of hard to explain because Jonathan, his character, hasn't been focused on very much. Like, he's been in the background of every episode pretty much. But, I mean, I guess Brittany knows him because she likes Gilmore Girls.
Listen, I interviewed Danny Strong last year and I am obsessed with him. I think he's brilliant.
Well, you've noticed him in the background of Buffy, presumably.
Of course. Well, I kind of knew that he was – I forgot that he was in Buffy when we started talking about Buffy, because a lot of people – I went to a couple Empire panels that he was on, and a lot of people asked him about Buffy and just, like, general Q&A stuff. And he was mainly there for the Gilmore Girls reunion. And
oh, he came for that?
Yeah, and he talked about Buffy a little bit, but I kind of forgot about it. And when I saw him, I'm like, oh, right, Danny Strong's in this. Well, and I forgot that, like, I was like, oh, he doesn't have that big of a role, but okay.
Just keep watching him, is what I'll say. He's a student at Sunnydale. He's in the background of nearly every episode, if not every single episode. I think, like, it's like a point, like a cameo point.
Once you see him, you can't stop seeing him.
You want a slow burn, like, keep watching Jonathan. Like, the character's called Jonathan, Danny Strong. So just keep watching. So, yeah, he's a big part of the Buffy, you know, masterpiece, I suppose. But he's, moved on to massive things. I only ever knew him for Buffy, and I only found out, like, relatively recently that he's involved with Hunger Games and then involved with The Butler, which I think is what got the Oscar nomination, and obviously Empire, which is massively revered as well. I had no idea that he had all of this really respected life as a screenwriter now until very, very recently.
And but also his most important role as Doyle on Gilmore Girls.
I have never seen that show, and I don't understand what you're talking about.
Natalie, jump on that train, please. Do yourself the favor.
Okay.
Sure. Okay, so next we have Olivia at OM Cantrell, who says, was someone eating yogurt in the last episode? Sounded like yogurt. I shouldn't listen to the show while I'm hungry. I will fess up. That was totally me. I apologize. I got a new recorder, and even though I mute myself on Skype, it doesn't mute my side. So just be thankful that I cut out the 3 very loud sneezes and me subsequently blowing my nose afterwards. Yes, all my fault. I will try not to eat yogurt anymore, but it was early and I was hungry.
It's just weird that I heard it and I was like, yes, that's yogurt. And then this person wrote in.
I've been eating peanuts the whole episode. Hopefully you haven't been able to hear that because I have been muting it. So.
That's amazing, Karen, though, that like yogurt eating has a specific noise.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty obvious. I tried to cut out as much as I could, but like clearly I was eating while other people were talking, so not really going to work out too well, but
it was kind
there
of like,
you go.
It was almost like an Easter egg. I felt like I was, like, peeking behind the magical Wizard of Oz's whole curtain and seeing, like, oh, geez, they do eat yogurt. Okay.
Eventually, when we do a documentary about our lives around Rewatchable, this will be one of those moments that we look back on, and it'll be like a little trivia note on the bottom of the screen. And, you know, when people are playing the Trivial Pursuit game of Rewatchable, this will be one of the questions.
So, this is sort of the traveling socks, right?
Yes, kind of like that, but with yogurt.
Great.
Okay. Mitch, you take this next one.
Mandy Kay at Mandy Kay wrote in saying, oh my gosh, the next four episodes, including these two that we just covered, are some of my favorites. I can't wait for the newbies to watch them. I know why you liked these two, and I don't even know the titles of the next weeks. I didn't even write it at the bottom, Karen, sorry. So that's good, because I don't like... See, Karen, that's the thing. I don't even like knowing the episode titles, because that even gives
me... I was going to say, do you want me to tell you? Because I have it open right now.
No, because Reptile Boy gave me away too much, and I had Jackson expectations, and I almost got them, so... I'd rather just go in blind. Like, I don't even know if I want to know the episode title while I'm watching it, if I can avoid it.
Okay, we can do that.
But that's too extreme for most newbies, I understand. That's like...
Hey, they can look it up on their own, so...
Yeah.
That's fine. Okay. We'll keep you out of the loop for that.
Cool.
Brittany, do you want to take this email?
Sure. So, this email is from Case, who says, hey guys, random question. Has anyone watched the show... Anyone on the show watched Twin Peaks? I'm asking because it is such a cult classic and they are planning on rebooting it soon, so that would be a great show to watch / rewatch. Also, I'm absolutely adoring the Buffy rewatch. Thanks! I've never seen Twin Peaks. Have any of you guys?
What is it? I hear it, but what is it?
It's pretty big. I watched the first episode and it was so insane that I don't know if I can watch it, but I kind of would like to eventually.
Like, is it BBC? What is that?
No. It's American. Oh. It's okay, Mitch. A very, very, very basic crash course. It is a show by the director, created and directed by David Lynch. He is a very famous director for making stuff like Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet, I think a couple of other things, Eraserhead. He's freaking crazy. Like, he's... The way he makes stuff is just, like, it's bizarre. It's like, you know, it's surrealist kind of. It's not like straight up. Like, think like Brian Fuller, but like if Brian Fuller was like chronically depressed or something like that. Like, he's really bizarre. But anyway, Twin Peaks was a show about a murder that happens in a small town and an FBI agent that comes into that town to investigate the murder, and that's basically what it's about. It's like the main characters are the FBI agent and this young, I think she's a waitress that he meets in the first episode or something like that, and she's kind of the other main character in it or something like that, or I don't know, I don't remember how she meets him, but I have not seen it like extensively. It's too crazy. I'm not into that level of crazy in shows. Like I like to just be told what's going on. I don't like, I can have twists, but I don't like arty shit in my shows. So, like, I'm sorry, but I don't. God knows how I got through 3 seasons of Hannibal, but,
yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was like, Natalie, how did you even stomach Hannibal for more than, like, 5 minutes?
To me, it sounds like if I was trying to compare it to anything else, it's kind of like... Danny Darko meets Hemlock Grove, if it's supernatural. It sounds like it might be supernatural.
It's not supernatural.
But still the same kind of plot points, like bringing in like kind of like super unreal things happening based around a murder in a small town, right?
I mean, that's the basis for a lot of shows, but...
Yeah, but I know. Because Danny Darko is just so out there, and Hemlock Grove is just so focused on that one murder and the FBI investigation or whatever that was. That's where I'm seeing, but I like you said, crash course. So maybe case.
I guess the point here is the suggestion of this show for rewatchable, which I will never ever disregard or anything like that. Totally possible down the line. I honestly do not know what our next show is going to be. None of us have really talked about it too in depth, and I don't even know if or how we're going to be splitting up Buffy at all. So I'll add it to the list, but until then,
we'll just have to see. Definitely has a humongous fan base that has probably already done multiple podcasts on it before. I'll just say that.
I mean, not that
it hasn't done it, so how can they ship anything?
Oh, don't worry about that.
Not that Buffy hasn't had a million podcasts about it, but it would be really interesting.
It's a cult show, really. If we did it, we might be able to score a guest, because Karen and I have an in there. Mm. But
a Teen Wolf, someone?
We do.
Yeah. David Lynch's daughter, Jen Lynch, who is also freaking insane. Not in a bad way, but
amazing.
She's a lot. Like, she's just... Anyway, she worked on that show with him. She also works on Teen Wolf. She directs on Teen Wolf relatively frequently. And yeah, one of our writers there is a massive fan of David Lynch and as well. So it's like a
Has done some incredible episodes of The Walking Dead too. FYI, she's done some really great stuff there.
Jen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really? No kidding, Karen. Yes. You have to tell me more.
Yep. I don't know off the top of my head. I would IMDb it because she's really cool, and you'll be interested to see which episode she did for that. Okay, last email is from Sarah, who says, I don't own the Buffy DVDs, so I have to rewatch on Amazon. Sadly, Amazon doesn't offer the original version, only the German dubbed one. So Seth Green as Oz appeared on screen and started talking, and he has the same voice as SpongeBob SquarePants. I think I must have suppressed this from my memory because it caught me completely off guard and was just so weird. Much love from Germany. That's hilarious, but also kind of frightening.
I'm really sad I haven't had Oz in an episode either yet because I got cock blocked from Spike and Oz, and I'm really upset about it.
We'll get there.
They're two of my very faves, and Seth Green is my longest running crush of my life, and I still would marry him in a second. I could walk into him on the street and he could be like, let's get married right now, and I would say yes and know that my life would be amazing with him. So, yeah, I will send you my photo with Seth Green that I have, and it is the most ridiculous fan photo you've ever seen.
Was it a Buffy meetup?
No. It was at a convention in Australia for other stuff.
Yeah, cool. I've seen that, actually, and it's...
Miss Love nice. Without a Paddle. Photo? That movie drives me crazy. Ugh.
What?
I don't know. You must have shown it to me for some reason.
That happened before I met you. Were you lurking my Facebook or something?
No, I think you must have shown it for another reason. I don't know. Anyway, unimportant. Okay, so that's us signing off. Thank you for listening, and you will hear us again next week, though maybe not us specifically. So until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, wait, Caitlin would usually go grr, arg, so there you go. Does anyone here like the car Ford, like the brand Ford?
I mean, it's a car that exists.
Is it like
I can tell you a bunch about the history of it from Detroit because I've been to like the abandoned buildings in Detroit where the factories used to be.
I can talk to you about the assembly line.
So as long as no one's like a diehard fan that's immediately on this podcast recording, I'm okay.
I don't think we're necessarily the type of people that would be diehard fans of Ford.
You'd be surprised.
Do you guys want to know a cool fact about Ford? Karen, you know a relative amount given Eminem, I assume, like in terms of like the car industry and like how the city became like abandoned and stuff like that.
Yes,
like,
you I am very aware of this and his relationship to the city. Stop laughing.
That's so funny.
It's not funny. It's important. He donates a lot of money. He cares about Detroit a lot, so therefore I care about Detroit a lot.
Okay. There is a product or a quote-unquote precious stone that's either known as Detroit agate or Fordite, and it is not actually a stone. It is a compound made of layers and layers and layers and layers of car paint, like the front that they peeled off the floors of the factory.
Oh, my God.